Hi, this is Jeffrey.
And this is Tu.
And welcome to the Inventor San Antonio Life Science Innovation Podcast, where we talk about amazing healthcare advancements in Texas.
Inventor San Antonio is a vibrant and growing chapter of Inventor Med founded in Houston, Texas.
We are a community-driven, grassroots, institution-agnostic, and nonprofit organization committed to biomedical career development.
We provide free programming, mentorship, and experiential learning to empower San Antonio, build a diverse community, and improve healthcare.
Did you know that San Antonio is a nationwide leader in transplant, diabetes, and military research? San Antonio has the capacity to become the next big biotech hub with a growing ecosystem of research, entrepreneurship, talent, and experience.
Our mission is to foster a community of future leaders to bolster the local bioscience ecosystem and to promote the advancement of life-saving healthcare innovations in San Antonio.
Inventor San Antonio, empowering tomorrow's innovators together.
Welcome back to the Inventor San Antonio Life Science Innovation Podcast. Joining us today is Dr. Cynthia Phelps. She got her PhD in pharmacology with a focus in neuroscience and parasitology. Then she did her postdoc in neuroscience with a focus in learning and memory. During her research fellowship, she focused in interactive technology design for learning with these many experiences with designing technology-based products, such as educational games and applications. She will be telling us all about the health tech space and her companies, Inner Ally and Healthy Designs. Welcome, Cynthia.
Hi.
So we'll first start off with, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So I was one of those kids who always was splashing around in puddles and really interested in nature. And so back then, everybody thought like, oh, you're going to be a doctor. Because you like science, right? Like that was like the only box that you could fit in. And so when I got to college, I was a pre-med major for a little while because that's what people told me I should do. And, yeah. But it didn't take very long for me to realize that those weren't really my people, that I really fit in better with the people who were curious about solving problems. And so I ended up getting a PhD rather than an MD. And I actually chose my PhD program based on some research that I had done at Michigan State University. But I wanted it to be some kind of a study that was close to human medicine without being the practice of. And so pharmacology was really great because you get to study all of the body systems, biochemistry, genetics, the whole deal, anatomy. But you studied it from the perspective of solving problems. And so that was more interesting to me.
Yes, I guess that's why I also decided to go to grad school and not med school.
Yeah, I mean, I had the same thing, trying to get into med school, but then switching to research instead.
Yeah, I gave up before the MCAT. I was never a good memorizer of material. I was really a much better investigator. And so I thought, well, this whole thing fits my skill sets a little bit better.
Yeah. So with your experience in research and academia, how did you transition into the tech space? How did you get an idea or an inspiration to start these companies?
Right. And so as I was getting my pharmacology degree, one of the things that fascinated me the most was how the brain and the nervous system worked. Back then, it was like the final frontier, the final black box of the body that we didn't really know a whole much about at the time. And I think the 90s was like the first decade of the brain. And so that really fascinated me. And so after I got my PhD, I did a postdoctoral fellowship in learning and memory and really studied it at the cellular level. And while I was doing that, I moved to Texas and I was at the UT Health Medical School in Houston. And while I was doing that postdoctoral fellowship, the internet happened. And so that's when browsers became popular. And all of a sudden, there was this new medium where you could create things that other people and share them on the computer. And I remember looking at making animations and like just simple things like branching pathways was fascinating. And so a friend, a couple of friends, one who was the web programmer at the time for the school and the other gal who was an artist at the time who helped people with their posters. This was back when departments are a little more flush with cash. we all used to get together and hang out, and we realized we all had a passion for science education. And so we decided to do a science education website where I would do the content, and we called it Brains Rule. And I created the content, and then our web guide did the code and the graphics, and everything came together in about a month of us like just working on it in our spare time. And we had, for that time, things that were incredibly innovative, like a quiz and animated GIFs and all kinds of fun stuff. And so when I saw what we had produced, I really had an epiphany. I was like, this is how people are going to learn in the future. And I essentially changed my career trajectory based on this little website that we had put together. And so I started looking around to my colleagues. So I was still solidly on the academic track. In neuroscience was the annual meeting that I would go to, and they had a poster session that was always specifically for people who were teaching neuroscience and the innovations in that area. And I started looking around to see who was using technology to be able to teach in their classes. And I started to kind of gather a group of colleagues who were interested in some of the same things. And we started writing grants. I found a woman at Rice University named Leslie Miller. And we wrote a grant to teach kids how to understand drugs of abuse from a science perspective. But we did it as a Flash adventure game. And so that was my first kind of foray into using interactive technology to teach. And what happened next is that I did another postdoc, and I say I did it in learning and technology, but it was really just me sitting in my office teaching myself all the things. Because I had no formal training in education and learning other than cellular learning. And I also had zero education in technology. And so I spent the next couple years just trying to figure out like what was on the cutting edge in this new space of using technology. I mean, we used to call it like computer assisted education back then. So it was a really interesting and fun postdoc. And at the same time, I was writing grants and working with other colleagues on projects, and managed to leverage a grant from the NIDA to teach kids about their brains and into a faculty position. And then I was faculty there at, they had just started a new school. At the time, they called it the School of Health Information Science, and it was one of the UT Health schools in Houston there. And they brought me on as faculty to help develop this new focus within the school that was on learning and technology within the health sciences. And so I was super excited to do that, and spent those 9 years doing some really interesting and innovative things. And I got to collaborate with our School of Public Health, who were doing behavior change projects. You know, how do we figure out how to help kids with asthma, lower their incidence of having an attack? And how do we help people with some chronic diseases change their behavior? And so that was super fascinating to me. And I also got involved in looking at the gaming industry and how to begin to use some game mechanics and game design principles to be able to develop interactive technology to make it fun and motivating.
So you're one of the pioneers in these technology-based education and health.
Right. I guess so, right? Because that was a long time ago. Yeah, I think we got that first grant to do the project from the NIDA in 1997. Yeah, that was a long time. We just by pure chance, selected Flash as the technology to use for that. And believe it or not, that thing stayed up from like 1998 until like just a couple years ago.
Wow.
Wow. You could still actually play that game, which is really incredible. It's sometimes picking the right platform for your projects makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about your current companies?
Sure. So in 2009, I had been a faculty for about 9 years at that point. And I had been running a conference called the Advances in Teaching and Learning Conference. And it was really, the focus was all about how do you employ technology to be able to teach people or to change people's behavior. And so faculty and researchers and teachers from around the Houston area came to that conference. I think we had like a couple hundred, 200 to 300 people every year show up. And so people kind of got to know me as like the tech chick. And I was approached by the Veterans Administration. At this point, the way that they were training their psychologists and psychiatrists is that the VA would make this grand edict on high, like all psychiatrists must be able to teach like brief family therapy. And then basically everybody would have to take this training across the United States. And they were flying people in and doing these weekend seminar trainings, and it was expensive and the, crappy hotel food, and nobody really liked it. And so they called me up and they said, "Hey, you're the technology chick, and we think that we need to be teaching these classes online." And they said, "Can you help us with that?" And I said, "Totally." And then I figured out how to do it. Well, that's not entirely true. I had been teaching online in various ways for a few years, but in all honesty, it was learning new platforms and so forth. But that was my very first client. And so that was, I remember the day when I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to start a company and quit my job, right now the university owns everything, right? My technology, all my intellectual property. And so I have to start cutting the cords. And so I remember I was on the, I was thinking, well, I need to buy a computer. And then I was like, well, I need a credit card to do that. So I'm on the phone with a credit card company, opening up a business credit card. And then they were like, well, ask me these questions, and they're like, "What's the name of your company?" And I'm like, and I said, "Phelps Designs." And so my company was originally incorporated as Phelps Designs LLC because that's what I came up with when I was asked that question. And then a few years later, I had been wanting to name it something a little more appropriate, and I came up with the idea of calling it Health, and then E for Electronic Designs, which, that was edgy back then. Now it sounds a little like, okay, whatever. But so that's how Healthy Designs got started. And so Healthy Designs offers online course development. In 2011, I started doing mobile development.
And then I also will occasionally do some web application, website development stuff for certain clients as well. And my focus, you know, primarily has been in the area of mental health. And so my clients for Healthy Designs tend to be universities or folks like the VA. A couple of years ago, we just finished up a project with Trinity University professor, where we were developing a mobile app that helps patients actually track their experiences between sessions with their therapist. And so he's actually doing research using that app right now. And the latest project that I'm working on right now with Healthy Designs is a app with a couple of young psychologists who do something called dialectical behavioral therapy. And this is their specialty is called radically open. And so the way they had been practicing this with their clients is that they had this paper tracking tool that the poor person had to carry around with them and track their stuff every day. And so we're turning all of that into a mobile application to allow that therapeutic modality to be a little bit easier on the people who are trying to practice it.
They'll probably get a lot more engagement from the patients as well.
You know, I think so. And, you know, they're able to print it out as if, you know, they still have a piece of paper if they wanted to. They can email it to their therapist. And it's easier for them to use it than the piece of paper, because we can put banks of information into the app and then have it searchable. So when they have to pick out the different skills and things that they want to work on per week, we can have all that stuff preloaded. So it's actually quite nice.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing all the designing and developing of these apps yourself?
That's a very good question. So with my background, my primary focus is on design. And so my passion is to try to figure out like matching the content to the interaction in the technology to help people learn or change behavior, right? And so that's my real sweet spot. I am not a programmer. You know, I know just enough to be dangerous and to hire programmers. So I run that company as a consulting company where I basically sit between the client and the programming team. And so I have a variety of different teams that I used over the years and different experts that I'll pull in for particular things, like for animation or whatnot, if we need them. And so my job ends up being, I do some interface design, I do all of the interactive design, and I do a lot of the project planning and project management components. And for the client, what it looks like is they don't have to talk to a programmer. They don't have to try to explain their science and what they're trying to do, their research or their mental health or that kind of stuff to somebody, because because of my background, I can speak their language. And so that's a real huge value for them. Mm-hmm. And so that ends up being a niche market for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So are you also running or handling the business side of or part of your company?
Yes. You know, and it's like, it's getting easier. You know, it's been, oh my gosh, you know, a long time now that I've owned the company. And, you know, sometimes it's like you're like the chief trash taker outer, you're the bookkeeper, you know. Finally, I've started to outsource some stuff. I don't do my own taxes anymore. And I hired a bookkeeper 3 or 4 years ago. And that has made a world of difference in how smoothly things run, because the super detail stuff is not really my forte. I'm much more of a vision and design type person. I can project manage, but in all honesty, if I had enough money, I would hire one of those too.
All about teamwork.
The fun stuff, right?
So I guess you didn't have any business background before.
No.
You started. Oh, okay.
Right? Well, clearly that's never stopped me having the right background.
That's the spirit. If you want to do it, you learn how to do it, or you find someone else who knows how to do it.
You know, and that's, you know, people are like, well, you know, you don't need a PhD to run a business. And I was like, that is correct. You don't need an MBA either. But, you know, one of the great things about having a PhD is that it teaches you how to think. And it teaches you how to solve problems. It teaches you how to, you know, look into the literature and figure out how things work. And that has just always served me, even in business. It can seem a little unrelated. But I think some of the overall ways that we're trained to think, it's very helpful. It's very helpful. Now, that does not help me use QuickBooks, right? Like, still have to learn the details of stuff like that. But yeah, I think that one of the great things about having a higher degree, like a PhD, is that it's essentially a doorway into whatever you want it to be. I've used mine liberally to do many things. And so, I started another company, called Inner Ally, because I was making mobile apps for other people, to help people improve their mental health. And I really got fascinated, about 2012 with the field of positive psychology. And so that is essentially, instead of studying people who are mentally ill and trying to figure out how to fix them, which is traditional psychology research, positive psychology is studying people who are thriving, looking at their habits and their practices, and then figuring out how to apply those to the rest of us so we can all thrive. And so this is kind of like almost like the shift from that dentistry, I think, was the first medical modality to really make that shift, where they all of a sudden were like, you know what, if you brush your teeth, actually they don't fall out. So it's just like, well, it's more of a wellness model, it's more of a prevention model. And so I got super fascinated with this concept called self-compassion, which is all about treating yourself with kindness and support, particularly during times of struggle. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated with it because, like, I wanted everything that it said that happened if you could have high levels of self-compassion. And that is, people with high levels of self-compassion tend to be more resilient. They tend to have higher well-being and happiness. They are more creative and innovative, more productive. They tend to have better relationships. And it's actually negatively associated with anxiety, depression, stress. And then some of the research I've done shows that it's associated with a high self-compassion is associated with a lower risk for addiction. Mm-hmm. And then in that survey study, we looked at alcohol, opioids, and cannabinoids. And so it's fascinating to me. And when I found this research, I was actually struggling with alcohol myself. Mm-hmm. I had been through a very difficult time in life, and alcohol, which was a friend and something that was fun to do and a reason to go out with other people, became a way for me to kind of shut my emotions down. And things got pretty bad. When I found this research, it was like, I knew I had found the thing that was going to change my life. It was the hole that needed to be felt. Mm-hmm. And so I started practicing, and there's a woman named Kristen Neff, who is a faculty at UT Austin, right up the road. Her expertise is self-compassion. And so I took her classes, I got certified in her process, I did all the things. in, you know, I really changed my life. Like my life was not headed in a good direction. And so, I feel really passionate about it because I know this stuff really works. It's not just fluff and it's not just like happiness, like, oh, be happier. Like, no, it can really change your life in really significant ways. And so when I was doing that training, you know, I'm a researcher and a curriculum writer and all that good stuff. And I was going through the training and I'm kind of like, you know, there's some things in here that I don't think are expanded on well enough. And one of them was how you talk to yourself. And so it turns out that if you can speak to yourself in a way that's kind and supportive, like this is a huge chunk of the whole practice of being self-compassionate. I mean, there are other things as well, for sure. But this inner voice part, I really felt like it was the linchpin. And so the name of my company, Inner Ally, is all about how you can build this inner ally. I mean, most of everybody's heard about the inner critic. We're pretty familiar with like that inner voice that gives us a hard time. And so the company is built on these positive psychology research principles, like how to build this positive inner ally voice for people. And so, yeah, so I started that company in 2014, and that's kind of my startup company. I do some coaching and teach some classes in that space, but I have been plotting and scheming for a while now on trying to get a mobile app out there. And so I actually just pitched for funding last week at the Geekdom Community Fund, which is a angel or seed level funding here in San Antonio that's available to people who want to be entrepreneurs. And I get to find out, when do I find out? I find out tomorrow if I won or not. I was one of five finalists. And so, I've got a reasonable shot. So that company is still basically the tech side of it is in startup mode.
I see. So I guess we discussed some of the not really challenges, but some hurdles that you have to overcome, such as learning how to, learning the technology, learning the business side of things. Were there any other challenges when you started these companies?
I think one of the main hurdles for people starting a company is the level of uncertainty is very, very high. I'm sure you've heard statistics about, you know, I don't know, 9 out of 10 businesses fail within the first 3 years, something like that. It's pretty bad. And so managing kind of this level of uncertainty for me and a lot of entrepreneurs that I've talked to, you come right up against your own worthiness. You know, like, can I do this? Am I allowed to do this? You know, like, who am I to do this? Some of these questions. So I really feel like some of the psychological barriers to starting a company and persevering to make a company successful are psychological. And so, you know, when I teach about self-compassion in my Inner Ally classes and so forth, I do a lot of workshops. I actually work with entrepreneurs. One, I know the problems that they face because I am one. But they are this like really interesting audience of people because they face so much uncertainty. And so it's like uncertainty, the like, am I good enough? Am I worthy enough? And just, you have to go to bed every night knowing that there's so much more you could have done. You never get your task list done. Like, that's just not a thing in entrepreneurship. So you have to be able to come to terms with managing your workload and taking care of yourself.
And so the people who are able to practice self-care, practice the self-compassion that I talked about, those people are going to be more resilient, and they're going to end up being more successful in business, particularly long-term.
The next question would be the current situation we have right now. Did your companies get affected by COVID?
I definitely had a couple of contractors that I was doing some science writing for one company, small business here in town, and they pulled the plug on that. And so some projects got cut off. But on the whole, I have been extremely lucky. You know, I have this mobile contract that we're working on with the DBT professionals that has been persisting. Like, I signed that contract in February. Like, shoo! I actually put like a COVID clause in that contract, which basically says something along the line of like, if anybody gets sick, you know, we're just going to have to push the timeline. Because I was like, you know, we don't know what's happening. The world, that was when everything was even more uncertain. So that was really, I got really lucky, and I still have more business that I'm doing with Healthy Designs. And then Inner Ally, it's really been a boon because people need what I have. This is my second podcast this week, actually. And I just did a talk about how to look at your inner critic and then shift it to the inner ally at San Antonio Startup Week. And I think that you can listen to the playback of that on their Facebook page.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And so I have been, and then I did a series for early on in the pandemic for the UTSA grad students, because at that point you could not even get an appointment with a counselor because they were so overwhelmed. And then tomorrow, actually, I am starting a 4-week series with Trinity University students. It's not just pandemic related, but the pandemic basically magnifies, you know, being a college student is already pretty challenging, especially at, you know, a university like Trinity, where, you know, everybody shows up above average. And then, but now, you know, some of the stuff that's going on over there just makes it so much harder. Like, for some reason, the way they scheduled their tests, they're not even on the same day as their classes. And so even students that are coming back as like juniors and seniors are still like, what is happening? What's going on? Oh. So it's a challenging time. Plus the strange isolation, you know, not being able to hug people. And it's so the short story is that Inner Ally is really starting to pick up, and hopefully I can capitalize that on that and get some funding. Inner Ally did just win the Awesome SA Award. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that group, but it's a national organization that has, it's a local chapter of that. And what they do is they have 10 people get together every month and they each pony up $100. And so they give $1,000 away every month to like the best idea that's going to make San Antonio more awesome. And so,
wow, that's cool.
Right. So they gave it to Inner Ally, and that's what's going to be funding the Trinity project. And it also funded me printing out a whole bunch of decks of the Inner Ally cards. And so, just briefly, part of the Inner Ally process is character driven. And so the characters kind of give you some inner supportive and kind language to model for you to make it less painful. Mm-hmm. And we did it as kind of like a fun and colorful character based system. And there's like a deck of 16 cards that have characters on them that can guide you through revamping your inner language. And so it's really fun. And so that part of that award went towards printing these cards. And so all the Trinity University students that are going to be participating are going to get a deck of cards, and it's going to be really fun.
I actually have seen those cards at Health Tech Hackathon.
Oh, right.
I remember seeing those cards. They were really nice.
Oh, very cool. I'm glad you got exposed to them. Well, hopefully there's going to be a lot more decks running around now that we got that award. I have a giant box sitting in my house right now.
And you also gave a little workshop at UT Health. I attended that workshop.
Excellent.
Do you have any visions for something similar for the graduate students who are even more stressed than the undergraduate students?
I would love to work with your graduate students. I just need to reach out, I think, quite honestly. I would be happy to. I mean, I know what it was like to go through and get a PhD. And I did it during a time where, you know, there was no world pandemic going on. And when I was a professor, you know, I was basically the professor where the students would walk into my office and shut the door and then have a breakdown. Yeah. Because they knew that I was like the person who would help them through it and would be open-minded and non-judgmental and that kind of thing. And so, you know, counseling students was really a fun part of my job. And so, yeah, when I worked with the UTSA graduate students, it was really fun for me. But I think it would be even more fun to work with your life science graduate students. That would be even more right up my alley. Yeah, set me up.
And so when you first started venturing into the business space, how common for a woman to start her own business, and did you face any challenges?
You know, that's a good question. I'm a Gen Xer, and so my generation really benefited from the women who came before me. When I was faculty, there were lots of women faculty. Mm-hmm. And there was a women in science group, and I actually ran the local chapter of that. And then I also ran our women faculty chapter for a year. I was pretty active in that space of promoting women in science. But there was still a lot of inequity. You know, my actual PhD was studying a parasite, even though it was a neuroscience type project. And parasitology was like all men, completely all men. Mm-hmm. And so for the most part, I've been really lucky in opportunities. But when you start a business like I did, where I had already networked in the space and people already knew what I was doing and understood my value, it didn't really matter as much that I was a woman, because I was like the one to call. And so I really benefited from that. And also, I didn't try to get a bank loan. Which is that can be very harrowing. And that's where a lot of people face discrimination. When you start a small business, like a restaurant or something like that, you know, you may need $200,000 to get things off the ground. You know, I basically started my company and then, you know, ran it from Costa Rica for a month because like I didn't have any overhead. I had my computer, right? That was like literally all I needed to run my company. And so from that perspective, I was really lucky. And so I didn't have to be in the situations where I was dependent on the old white man to give me money, right? Whether the old white man was venture capital or angel investing or, you know, Wells Fargo, right? The bank. I didn't have a need for any of that. And so I was a bit sheltered.
What are your thoughts on San Antonio's bio-entrepreneurship ecosystem? I know it's like starting to get it off its like feet. I would like to hear from yourself what you think of it.
Yeah. So when I first moved here, I became involved really early in Geekdom, which is like the tech entrepreneur space, co-working space downtown. And because of my background in kind of the health and the biosciences,
I started a meetup group there. What did I call it? It was actually a local chapter of a larger organization. Oh, Health 2.0. And so back then, geez, what year was that? 2013, somewhere around there. There wasn't a whole lot of traction at my monthly meetups. I would have anywhere between like 5 to maybe max like 15, sometimes 30 people show up, like if it was a really interesting topic. And I did that for a few years and then it kind of died out. Then I got connected with another organization called the Health Cell, which is an organization that's both people in the healthcare industry and also the biosciences. And that's where I really began to get some more traction. And so I sat on their board for several years and I really tried my best to kind of connect that organization to what was going on downtown and the new kind of tech development world. And so I think kind of the pinnacle of that is we ran something called the Health Tech Bootcamp, where it was like a 3-day event where people came with ideas and then we formed teams and they worked hard all weekend on these problems. We fed them really good food. And at the end of the experience, they basically pitched their ideas in a competition for, you know, a little bit of funding. And so that was really fun. But, you know, the space in San Antonio, when I first got here, a lot of it was really dominated by the medical device community, which is small but mighty. and they're still really strong in San Antonio. But now when we have, there's like a lot of other things that are going on. What is the Velocity Texas is, you know, has a brand new facility and is really promoting those kinds of projects now. TIER, and I can't keep track of all the acronyms, but basically the academics out on the West Side, they're getting more interested in really working with people to start companies. And so, and in fact, I think there is an SBIR meeting that's happening, which is, that is a way to get funding for people who are starting small businesses but want to get some money from the government to help them to do it. And so it has a research component to it. And so that's really great for anything kind of the biosciences, life sciences, startup world, because you know, you could be Mark Zuckerberg and you can start like an empire in your dorm room, right? With a tech company, because there's not much overhead. It's, you just build and try stuff. But, you know, in the world of life science, biotech, that kind of world, you know, you might need to do an IRB, you know, go through an institutional review board so that you can test your products on real humans and not hurt them and cause harm. And so these companies tend to have a slower trajectory of growth. And so it requires a different type of investment. And so I think San Antonio is starting to really see the value of those types of companies and put some more resources there. And so over the time that I've been in San Antonio now for 10 years, and over the period of time, I've seen the funding for tech companies really grow. But it's only been over the last 3 years have I seen more of the biotech or health life science tech really start to grow. And so there's some exciting things happening. I'm kind of out of the loop on some of it, you know, because I'm just over here in my little corner making little mental wellness apps. But it's still a really great place to be.
Yeah, definitely. Seems it's exciting to see how San Antonio is really growing.
That it is.
So I think we hit the time for the episode. I would like to thank you for joining us today, and it was a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Well, you know, it was really fun for me to get to kind of go back in my history and chat about some of this stuff. And,
you know, I would just encourage the people who are listening, who are either in the process of getting higher degrees or just got them or even dropping out, right? There are so many things out there for you to do. Just be willing to take a little bit of a risk and just challenge yourself with looking and trying to think outside of maybe some of the normal channels that you would go through in academia, because your skills are needed. And just because you studied one thing doesn't mean that you have to stick to that. So go forth and be awesome.
Yeah. I think a PhD is very special in a way that it doesn't really train you for a specific job. It gives you a set of skills that you can apply to other things.
That's a great way to say it.
Thank you for stopping by today, and I hope you have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was the second episode of the Inventure San Antonio Life Science Innovation Podcast. I hope you come to realize that with a PhD, you can really do anything your heart desires. In this case, Cynthia went out into the tech realm and created two companies out of it. I think the biggest takeaway from this episode is don't be afraid to explore. Find that inner ally and go out there and do something awesome.